What is up, beautiful people, and welcome back to a new episode of the Connect podcast. This is the platform that explores stories of purposeful life lived across and in between cultures and celebrating our common existence and humanity. I am your host, Ghali, and every single week I'll come on here to speak to you guys about some life things or sit down with a guest to speak about things like identity, culture, lifestyle, and purpose. On this week's episode, we are talking all things human rights and coffee. How, you ask? Well, I sat down with Lathan Taco, the founder of Taco Network, a platform for young women to advocate for international women's causes, and the founder of the new online coffee brand, Taco Coffee. Lathan has been involved in championing human rights causes and women's issues for so many years. She empowers young audiences and gets them to engage with public affairs and activism. She makes good trouble. And those are the types of things that we sat down to talk about in this interview. This episode was definitely something that inspired me to think differently about how I organize and create spaces, not by separating my interests, but actually combining them. And I hope that you guys take something away from this episode as well. So yeah, enjoy it, guys. What are some of your earliest memories when it comes to fighting for a cause?
I would say it started really, really early. I would say like from age of 4 or 5. I was actually born in Somalia. I was born in Mogadishu during the civil war, and we're not from Mogadishu. We're from a town called Marko, which is outside of Mogadishu in Somalia. But due to the civil war and the unrest, we had to. My parents were actually moving around, so coincidentally, I was born in Mogadishu due to the displacement of the war. But originally, we are from Marko. So after I was born, we went back to Marko to kind of like for me to have a little bit of childhood there. And I remember we used to go to madrasa, duksi. We call it duksi in Somali, where you have to learn Quran. It's the first thing you do. And that's the thing I love about our culture. Like, religion is very, very important, but it's also the heart of our tradition. So before you even go to school, you have to go to duksi and learn the Quran. And I remember like the way the sitting was arranged, and it was like the boys and the girls, which is just like normal in Islamic school or duksi. But I remember I used to move around, and I used to get into a lot of trouble because I used to move around, because the girls should stay in the girls section and the boys should stay in the boys section. And the ma'alin always used to report that back to my parents, just saying like, she is not following the rule. Like, she should not be moving around from her seat. She should be staying in the girls section. But the thing that helped me was, I was really good at memorizing my surahs. Like, I'm on top of the class, so you can't even come for me. You know, I would finish all my surahs. I'm here helping out my brother. But that was seen as a bit crossing the line. But for me, even 4, 5, I was just like, why? Why can't I go help my brother? It's not that deep. I'm just helping him, you know. And I didn't understand why I was getting into trouble. So I think that will be the earliest memory of like questioning like a division or thing. And it's not that it's wrong or right or why we had the boys and the girls separate. It's just normal. Like, we had female ma'alins, sometimes we have the male ma'alin. It's not, if those of you who don't speak Somali ma'alin, it's just a teacher. So it wasn't a big deal, but it's just for me, it's like, why can't I move around? Why are you restricting me? So yeah, that would definitely be the earliest way of knowing that I was questioning things.
That's really interesting, because for everyone, there's always those moments that sort of start that spark, you know, and some people are sort of born with it, like character-wise, and some people learn it, but clearly I'm hearing a lot of similarities to who you are now as like a 5-6 year old. So the civil war happens, you're in Somalia with your family, and then you guys
do you move straight to the UK, or when does that move come?
We then moved to Ethiopia. I went to school in Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, and they were really, really nice, very hospitable people. And I've loved the food, and this is like a long time ago, but Ethiopians in general, like, not to bring politics, but I think the people are nice. You know, if you lived with Ethiopians, if you've had Ethiopian neighbors, you just know that they're very easygoing, mind their business. And they have welcomed us, actually. They loved my grandma. And I know that when it comes to Somalia and Ethiopia, it's politics A1. But just from a human perspective, it was really, really nice just to have like a little childhood in Ethiopia and learn the language, learn Amharic, get to know them as well. Obviously for us it was like pass by because we were on our way to the UK, but still we felt at home and we really, really loved it there. But there are also, just it's worth mentioning that there are Somalis who live in Ethiopia, like who are like the fourth, fifth generation, who celebrate fully, who have the Ethiopian flag, they have the whole thing. But we were more of the Somalis that were passing by, and there's obviously different cultures with that. But yeah, for me personally and my family, we've had a really good experience there, and till this day, we still go to have like anjera, which is a traditional Amharic food, and we go to celebrate to eat there. It just reminds us of like back home in Ethiopia. So that was really lovely. So yeah, and then we then got a visa to join and reunite with my mum, who was already in the UK, my brother and I and my dad. So and then I just went to school from there, started at year 8, and then yeah, just went from there to college and university and just work life, and just had most of my life shared experiences were in London.
No, that's really interesting to hear. Yes, especially your experiences as someone who isn't from Ethiopia but found home there, and talking about like how hospitable they are, because they really are a very kind people,
very nice,
and yeah, they really are, and very soft spoken as well.
Yeah.
Which is like the complete opposite of like being Somali. Like, we're not soft-spoken people at all. But yeah, my mom's family are, of course, ethnically Somali, but like from Ethiopia and for generations. So it's really cool to hear that same. I think that she had a similar experience to you, but in reverse. But when you moved to the UK and you're sort of like growing older, how did the differences in culture in this new society that now is your home, how did those differences sort of mold your advocacy and your activism? And you may not have had a word for it when you were younger, but what was happening around you that sort of grew that part of you more?
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because again, I had no idea that I was an activist, or I was like a natural born campaigner, and I was really, really super passionate about making a change. Till obviously you get older and you actually find out there's a field for it. There's a humanitarian field. Like, sign me up. You know, take my paper, take my degree. Like, this is it. I found my home, and I'm so grateful, because there's people who spend a lifetime searching where their home is or where they want to be. And I think average humans change 4 or 5 different paths of careers or like jobs and stuff. So if you are not, if you haven't found your home, if you haven't found, you know, what it is that you're really, really passionate about, don't be harsh on yourself, because there's people who are 50, who are 60, who literally found out that they really love plants and they always wanted to deal with
So true.
So yeah, just want a disclaimer, like, do what you love and enjoy, and just to be alive is a blessing, and you will eventually be in a place. But I was just one of those people who are lucky because of the field that I'm from. It's just not something that I can be or act is something that I was naturally born with. It's just like a talent where you go and you're good at running or you're good at football. I was just really good at defending people and standing up for people. I'm shocked that I'm not a human rights lawyer. I think that's also another thing that I think I would have excelled. But yeah, that's just something that was within me. There's like a little fire that burns inside that directs me to these causes. But when I came to the UK, it was really interesting because it's a different culture and stuff. But again, because I lived in Ethiopia and there, like, I've seen a lot of Christians there. Not many people wore a headscarf in Ethiopia. They're quite Western. They have Western mentality and Western views, some of them as well, even though they have with a splash of Ethiopian culture. So for me, it was easier for me to kind of like fit into London because it was okay. You know, I lived in Addis Ababa where there was different people there, even though they were all Ethiopians. Like, for just to say, Ethiopians have different tribes, they have different religions and different swags in terms of culture. So it's such a beautiful fusion that was happening in Ethiopia that, so when I came to the UK, it was just like, okay, there's different things. It might be different because I'm seeing a lot of white people, but then still there's just different things going on, and I'm okay to adapt to that. And I was so young, so it was easy for me to catch up. But mm-hmm. with the humanitarian and not knowing who I am, again, when I went to school, remember that I went to school in Somalia as well, because I was academically like really, like, I was excelling even from young age. So I already had like maths in my, you know, there, and I already had the whole science thing, like a beginner kind of thing for science. So when I came to the UK, I think they put me into like a lower, I think it's called foundation paper instead of the higher paper, because of the language barriers. They just said, you know what, she'll be lucky to just learn how to speak the language, let alone get GCSEs or like anything. So they just made that assumption based on what they know, and they said, oh, okay, that's it, she would learn the language by in 4 or 5 years time, and she can do her GCSEs in college, and yeah, that'd be good. And wow. I remember like telling my mom when she translated it back, and I was just like, oh, okay, like I can learn the language, but I still know what they're talking about, you know, like, don't forget, in Africa, like, the education, which a lot of people undermine, is very strong, like,
yeah.
So for me, I'm just looking at the guy, like, I know he's trying me, but, like, I know my maths, like, are you all right? I'm smiling, we excel in maths and science, that's our thing. And with that being said, I have managed to learn the language, and because of my personality, I was quite, like, not judgmental as a person. So I would hang around with like the different types of groups, and I've managed to make friends and started running for the head girl in my school, became a deputy head, became a prefect in my school. And I remember there's an incident where my school friend, she was pushed out in the corridor. And even though I was, you know, running to be the head girl of the school and academically I was achieving well, I was a prefect, which meant that I was wearing a different uniform, I still got into a physical fight with the person who pushed my friend, because I was so upset that that person was like bullying, you know, like pushing my friend that way. And right. I got into trouble, and I didn't back down. I was so adamant to explain myself and say that what she was doing was wrong, and I don't care about what role I've had, I don't care who I was, even though I was running for the head girl, I'd rather lose out winning to be the head girl of the school then help my friend who is being bullied. And that bully kind of was exposed, and you know, it got to a situation where everybody was so happy that I would confronted that bully. And for me, that was just part of who I was, and I didn't mind risking the price to make sure that I'm on the right side, whatever the right side means. But those are the things that kind of stands up to me, is just standing up for people, even in school, and just challenging the education system at such a young age. So yeah, that's a few things that now when I look back, I'm like, oh my god, I was too young. I should be eating my tuna sandwich. Like, I shouldn't be dealing with this, you know?
Too much stress,
too much going on. And I didn't like when someone was judged or for their based of their looks and stuff. So that was pretty much school experience.
I definitely relate to a lot of that, because I was a very similar character in that sense. And even till this day, like, it's one of the things that if my dad is ever asked, like, what was Ghali like as a kid?
Yeah.
He's always going to be like, she was the kid that was standing up for other kids, right? But I also find that that's quite rare, right? Like, for young people to have that sense of, you know, sticking by what they know in their gut is right. Because a lot of the time at that age, you know, a lot of kids sort of deal with peer pressure and wanting to look a certain way and things yeah. like that. And I know that, of course, you have Taco Network,
yeah.
Which, you know, like you, there's a lot of young women that work with you, and you sort of, you have events that you plan. I would say that you even seem to be like a mentor for young girls, you know, and you also use it to advocate for international women's causes, and you have like your International Women's Day like celebrations and everything.
Yeah.
So how did you get to the Taco Network? What was like the first event that like you brought people together and you thought, this could actually be something?
I think that was when I came back from travel. Like, I had like a drink, because we've had so much to talk about how the travel went and what was going on and stories that I have, you know, endured. So I've just did like, oh, let's just go for a coffee and let's just have a little drink to talk about those things instead of just doing it online. And that time we had Skype. I was just getting bored of like setting up a Skype calls and not being able to hug the person and touch them and laugh with them. And I just said, you know what, let's just physically meet and then talk about these stories. Wouldn't it be fun if we actually laugh about these, joke about it, and you guys can tell me about your trips and I'll tell you about my trip, and we can just talk about these things, because going traveling like 10 years ago was not as common as it is now. So for me, it was just like to have someone who looks like me who experienced that was like a blessing. So that was just to connect with girls who understand where I'm coming from. You know, the fact that stories behind it, like telling your mom that you want to go mini world tour and she's looking at you like you've just lost her, because what are you doing? Go where? Like, what are you talking about? And it wasn't because we were not allowed, full stop. I think Somali, especially Somali women, are very, very strong, very powerful, but it was more of a concern. It was more of a like, you know, word for our safety and stuff like that, not necessarily like to control or not be for us to see the world, because Somali parents really want you to educate yourself. They want you to excel. They want you to be the best version of yourselves, which most of the time traveling allows you to grow. So if you communicate it and express yourself, they are willing to say, okay, you know, we understand. But it's just that time it was unheard of. So I just said, you know, right. Meet up. And after the first meeting, I remember we went to Saatchi Gallery in Sloane Square. We had drinks, we sat there, we had their scones, we just talked about like, oh, I'm about to tell my mom I want to go for 6 months, I want to tell my mom that I want to go to a placement. And that was such a beautiful story. And I just said, you know what, like, where do we go to talk about these things? We don't have anywhere to go. Like, telling someone from the UK or from other backgrounds, culture, they probably tell their parents they're traveling, and their parents just say, okay, go for it, you know. Where with us, we just have to come up with some sort of a explanation. We have to tell who we're going with, which agency, explain, and if you're lucky, your parents allow you, you know.
An entire game plan.
A game plan. You need a game plan and a half, save, work for a bit, show them your bank account that you are able, and prove to them, pay some of their Ayuto money, you know, to get their favors. So all of those things, some other girls just pack their bag, tell their mom they're going, and they go. And then you have to go through all that anxiety just to do that. So for me, I just said, you know what, it would be really nice for us to have a space where we can talk about navigating life with second generation experiences, and hopefully they will have much more. I didn't know it was going to expand and grow with me, because it's been 5 years now. Before, it started with like just telling your parents you want to travel, and then it changed to like, you know, changing different career, like saying, telling your parents you want to pursue in a different format of profession, which is not usually traditional in our community, and telling your parents that you want to marry someone who's from a different background, who's Muslim also. And for me, it's very important that all these things align with my religion, because even though I don't physically look like the most religious person, but everything I do, every step I take that into consideration. I just wanted to make sure it's halal as possible, and I'm not advocating something that contradicts my religion or perhaps like prohibited in Islam. And I would have wanted it to do it for young people at that time, but I knew if I mixed boys and girls together, it might have shaped the direction of, and also lose the purpose of it as well, where keeping it women only was for the religion purpose, to save myself as well, because I will be answering questions to Allah of, you know, the purpose of the what this is, and what it became, and what fitna came out of it. So I just need to reduce that as much as I can, because boy, I have a lot in my case. What I'm not gonna do is still collect the sins. No, thank you. So for me, that was one of the main reasons actually why I've made it women only. A, because I connect with them better, I can bring them together. But then, God forbid, I didn't know there was gonna be a pandemic, but I just thought to myself, no matter what happens, I can do it at the back garden of my house. You know, I can literally just say, even though I'm a super private person, I don't like strangers in my house, but as in like worst case scenario, I can rent like Airbnb, I can rent like a big hotel and bring these girls together. We can have a good time and go without thinking of anything haram. So alhamdulillah, like that's one of the reasons, that's how it was born. And after the first one, it just became such a like a space that was really needed. And a lot of girls were, I would say, inspired by those spaces. They've created their own spaces, which is absolutely beautiful to see. I think mine is just a little bit different because I'm behind it. I would always love it, and I've been there, so it has that little bit of a thing where I can just move it how I want to, kind of thing. But other girls did create a different spaces, and spaces for women, especially Black women and Muslim women. It's just a space for us to connect with each other, that's the right word, and just figure out what this thing called life is together with people who have similar experience, where you don't feel like an alien. You're just like, okay, cool, your mom, you want to tell your mom that you want to marry a brother who's different, who's from Nigeria or Ghana. Oh my God, like, how, what's mom going to say? What can we do, you know? Is he Muslim, sis? Is he Muslim? Yeah. And when she says yes, you're like, okay, we need a game plan now. And you know, we have sisters who do have children who want to go back into their professions, and so yeah, it's such a beautiful thing. And when it comes to International Women's Day, it's International Women's Day with a bit of sauce, because not every day free the nipple, not every day, you know, like that have no relations to us or our causes and what hurts us and what brings pain and joy to us. So I just make the whole guest speakers women that look like us, and they're from their profession, they're excelling their profession, so they bring their beauty, their stories, which I think are amazing. And I just sit there and navigate. I just literally like navigate and connect these girls. That's all I do. The rest comes from the attendees and the guest speakers. I'm just one of that person who just like, you know, puts it together, but I'm not the actual producer and the people who do these stories, who come up with the questions, are the women who attend the events and the speakers. I'm just here to connect.
That's absolutely amazing. Like, I've always really admired the events that you put on, and it's really weird because although I lived in the UK, whenever one of your events was on, was always like at a time that I couldn't do it. Like, it was either exams, or it was either I was out of the country, or it was always something, right? So
you can always come, sis.
So depending on what next year looks like, I might be back in the UK. But I mean, everything that you're talking about makes complete sense, because we need those communities, right? Like, a lot of the times when we talk about like representation, like everybody loves to talk about representation now, but really it's so much, it just feels so much more wholesome and touches you when it's people that look just like you. who have similar life experiences, who are sort of dealing with trying to figure out this whole like living between and across cultures thing, you know, because whether, you know, previous generations planned for it or not, we are living in a world where, you know, we are moving around quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, different cultures are influencing our lives. Mm-hmm. And so how do we make, you know, our dreams a reality out of, mm-hmm. you know, the cards that we've been dealt? And so when you touched upon like also being very mindful of religion, mm-hmm. And making sure that you're doing the right thing, in the eyes of Allah, like that is something that I very deeply resonate with, you know, doing things and knowing that one day you're going to have to answer for them, you know, and making sure that your intentions are pure.
Mm-hmm.
Because we also live in a world now, unfortunately, where there are people who sort of will put on, like, will say that they're supporting causes or put on events that are, you know, to support women's causes or whatever, but are really not about that life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you look at things that are happening in their life, it's just like there's a disconnect.
Yes.
So being honest and making sure that your intentions are pure is a very, very important thing.
Yeah. If you say that you are a cause for women, there's different ways to, I wouldn't say look at it, because like, let's say I advocate for women, I have been accused in the past of like not supporting because the person or like, you know, that situation was not aligning with the religion, right? So for me, what you see is what you get. Like, my religion is very, very important, and I can't campaign for something that is not me. That's just not me. And in terms of being creating a space for women and not being like, you know, about womanhood or being loyalty, the best thing for me is just like to see the integrity of that person and to judge if how they behave around the people that they've previously dealt with. Were they like, you know, exposing them? Were they and like not so kind to them? Are they the type of people to bash women? If you go through my social media, like for the past 10 years, it will be very hard to find me disrespecting another woman in any form of shape, unless I'm criticizing for an action which was probably to do with humanitarian stuff, you know? But like for me personally, I am very careful to, I think twice before I post, before I tweet, before I, you know, come for you. Like, even if I disagree with you, God is my witness. The amount of DMs that I've sent, the amount of phone calls that I've made in the past few years, if that made it to the timeline, I think it would have been
catastrophic.
No, I can't go there. Mm-mm. I can't say it. But it would be so bad. So for me, I was just dealing with it privately, where
of course,
if I disagreed with someone privately, I would just disagree with them privately. I will tell them, I don't agree with you. This was not nice. Knowing that if I went publicly and I tweeted you publicly, I knew how that is going to look. I knew how it was going to look. I knew that people are going to downplay the fact that there are spaces for women, and they'll just be like, yeah, but look at Lathan. She came for Kali. She said that about this and that. And it's so easy to make us like against each other. So for me, I just take my L's privately, and when it comes to like loyalty and how I am, it's a personal thing. Because for me, even if you're my friend today, if you're my friend tomorrow, alhamdulillah, it's just the way I raised you, was always a friend. You know, it's just it doesn't change anything.
True.
For me personally, like, I love you regardless, and I, not a lot of people can say that. For me, I love you regardless, and I respect you regardless, and your privacy is respected, and you are respected as an individual, and know that behind you, front of you, no one can say anything about you. But again, that's how someone is raised, and the integrity and loyalty, some of people have it naturally, and some people were raised that way. And yes, there are people who might create spaces that they're not passionate about, or they will do it, but then it's just easy to see through them, and it probably wouldn't be a legacy thing. It'd probably be like a, you know, one term thing and stuff, because their character does not match with their action. Some people will be able to do it in 30 years and 40 years, because at the end of the day, there's just something that they love, there's something that they're passionate about, and they can continue doing it without a single problem. But in terms of being criticized, you, of course, there will always be someone who would disagree with you and stuff, but you have to be very professional, and you can't, I can't be on social media and disrespecting women, bad mouthing women, exposing women and creating space for them at the same time. In my opinion, that will contradict my
very opinion. Hypocritical.
That's awkward, and I don't know. But that's not even me, because I wouldn't want to do that to you. You know, even if I don't like you, I won't follow you. If I don't agree with you, and you know, some thing, I will private message you. If I see concern, I will message you. I will tell you, hey, like I thought of this, and what do you think of this? Right. I don't need an audience to kind of like speak to you and communicate with you. And I think when it comes to women, this is what people love. People love drama. They love the fact that me and you disagree publicly, you know, like, oh my God, the amount of retweets that will come if me and you today just tweet one thing. And I think that kind of drama and that kind of attention, I've never wanted, and I don't want it ever in my life. So I don't need an audience to respond. I don't need an audience to disagree with you. And I don't need an audience to distance myself from someone. I can just do it privately.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And so during this time, building Taco Network, what has been like one of the biggest lessons around sort of building a legacy and something that is long lasting? What has been like, or maybe it's not one thing and it's a couple of things, but what have been some of the key learning lessons that you're just like, yes, if anyone ever wants to do anything like this, they definitely need to pay attention to this?
I would just say, like, one of the best things I've done for myself is just like done it myself and myself only. I think the last thing you would need is someone to take credit from the stuff that you've done, and just someone to turn around and say, like, this network would not exist without me, or, you know, this would not happen, you know, whatever. So I would just say the best thing I did was I just said, I'm going to start this, branded it myself, like with my own name on it, like everything. And I'm glad I did that. I've worked with amazing people in the run, but I was just always smart enough to keep that separate from my brand. One of the key learning was, if you can do it yourself, do it. If you can have a team, there's nothing wrong with that, because you can't grow by yourself, but make sure that you have contract in place if you're gonna work with people, if you're gonna partner with people, because people have this interesting thing where they mix friendship and family and this and that to their actual brand or whatever it is that they do, and it's always a mess, for what I have learned in the past. And it was nothing to do with it. I've seen it through other people start a channel together, and then, you know, they all of a sudden they're not talking anymore, so that channel is dead, and then people will say, like, what's going on and this and that. And there's also financial downfall as well. People don't sign contracts to things, and then when a profit comes, this is horrible. Luckily for me, I didn't have to deal with that, because I've never profited from Taco Network, so I was not in that situation. But I would just say, like, contracts, get your everything in check, and if this is something you want to do it yourself, just do it yourself, and find a team, hire a team, then, rather than like doing it with someone else where you don't know, because people outgrow each other. You know, even a partner, like, people just think, oh yeah, I'm married to him. And I will never forget a girl who came to me a few years ago saying, oh yeah, me and this guy, we're doing this together. And everything she was saying was more coming from her than the other person. And I just said to her, like, why don't you do it yourself? Why are you entangling yourself with another person? Entanglement, you see what I did there?
It is entanglement. So I was about to say.
I would just say, why not do it yourself? And yeah, that's one of the biggest thing was, if you can do it yourself. And just knowing the personal data as well, like, you know, it's so easy, because I work with women, and you know, the information they share is quite sensitive. So safeguarding was something that I've learned, like, just to make sure everybody's phone is off. I've never actually filmed any of my events inside. It was always just like, I'm sure you've just seen snippets and people talking about it after. So I've created that space where it's not recorded from the beginning to the end. You just see us dropping jams. And like, other than that, I had to get permission from the girls. So just make sure that it's private, and knowing that it can damage that person's work or reputation, or maybe whoever they're talking about is their family member. So privacy, safeguarding, is not something to be taken lightly. I switched off everyone's phone in all my events. Phones are off. Most of them, you can only use it for like for your own purpose, not necessarily to film or record the events. Yeah, that's something I was really, really careful, and something I've learned to be careful with, because it can take you to, it can get you into trouble.
It really can, and I don't think that people actually realize it. I always say that because right now I'm working on different projects. And some of the best people that I know to like help me with some of these things are my friends, right? And so there's always going to be awkward conversations where I'm just like, listen, you and I are friends and I love you, right? But in order to like protect this friendship and protect each other, these things need to be signed and we need to be clear. Because yes, we are friends, but in business, listen, things need to be real clear and people need to understand what their roles are, because a lot of the times people can get very familiar and you'll like get a phone call and they'll be like, oh yeah, so I have this great idea and I want you to help me out. And all of a sudden you're working on something for your friend, but it's like a full-time job and you're like, I don't even know how I got into this. You know what I mean? So it's just like people need to be very honest. Yeah, people need to really agree on things and be very clear. And when it comes to like people, like you said, turning phones off and stuff like that and safeguarding, like not only is it like very sensitive issues and so safeguarding measures have to be in place, but it's also a trust thing, right? You're building a community. Like people are entrusting the space with some things that are very personal, and stories that can be very uncomfortable, and maybe things that they've never even shared with anyone, you know, and could change their lives very drastically if it got out. So yeah, no, those are very, very important lessons. And I think I'm going to reroute a bit and make this a bit lighter, because what people may not know, if they're new to who Lathan is that you've been a barista for a very long time. And I'm not sure, did you quit this year?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, like, I've got bills to pay. Do you know what I mean?
As much as
doing that, I just have so much going on. I couldn't do it. It's something that I love. I wish I could do it at least even a day of the week, but I can't. I'm working. So, and I have a lot on. So I wasn't able to do it, unfortunately, this year.
So take me through, how did you get into like this love? I mean, you lived in Ethiopia, so I don't know if Ethiopia has anything to do with your love of coffee.
Are you trying to claim it? You're trying to claim the Ethiopian side is trying to take my coffee credit.
I mean, their coffee's pretty great. But but how did you actually like become a barista and get to know so much about coffee?
Do you know what, yeah, now that you mentioned about the Ethiopian thing, it's really important that I mention the house that we moved into when I was in, when we went to Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, was next to coffee roaster, like a big roasters.
Here we go. I'm not saying I guessed it, but like...
So basically, it's very important that I'm transparent, because Allah can see my heart, you know. So basically, I remember I was so young, and there was a roaster, and it was just always smelled so delicious next to our house. And I'm like, what is going on? What are they doing? But now I know they used to roast coffee. Like, oh my God, that's amazing. But yeah, like in if you are in Ethiopia, if you went to Ethiopia, you know that the coffee culture is quite big there, and it's not just like gentrification or anything. They just love coffee, bun. So yes, I did. It had my first glimpse of coffee in Africa. Like, first it was in Somalia because my grandma in the morning mm-hmm. would literally like coffee, like Somali kahwa, which is just also yeah. like water roasted, but more fluffy coffee. And I just knew that it would wake people up, it would give them energy, and I knew that it smelled really, really nice. I was like, oh, this is delicious. And I was like, I can't wait to get old, listen to the BBC and drink coffee. Yeah, it's really sad. But then
you're such an old little person.
I was like, I can't wait to be 30 so I can be 30, you know? But when I came to the UK, like, and when I was, I think, first year or second year university, that's when I started working for coffee shops, and I just love like the hospitality aspect of it. And again, I think it interlinks with my humanitarian field, because it's such a beautiful thing, especially if you work for specialty coffee, where you get to meet the people every day, you know them, you can check up on them. So it's just like how I am, you know. I just want to know how that job went. I want to know, like, how is your wife, how was your honeymoon, and things like that. And coffee shops, you get to hear those beautiful stories. Some people come in to get their interviews done, so you overhear. I can give them water to come down and get ready for their interview. So I was very lucky to be independent coffee shops, and that's where the exposure came from. And I was just like, oh, this is amazing. And when I was starting Taco Network, I interlinked the two, where I was able to provide these spaces, give them coffee and tea, and let them talk. And one of my first videos was actually Tea with Lovin at first, because it was to bring that home side to it. But then I realized I love coffee more than tea. And that's really cool. We just called it Coffee with Lovin. And yeah, that's how it went. It was just to create these spaces, create the coffee for them, and to hire the whole space that I was working at, bring those girls, and I make the coffee for them, which created that little bit of humbleness for me as well, where they can just be like, okay, cool, Lovin is the one who's making the coffee. You know, I'm not just the host, I'm also your cleaner, I'm always the person who's picking up everything after the event as well. Kind of
right.
That environment where we're here to create space for ourselves, and I'm not like someone who is like the owner or the founder or anything like that. No, this is just, I'm here to make the drinks, and
yeah,
here to feel comfortable, you know. I'm here to look after you, I'm here to hold you. And I think that resonates a lot of with Taco Network, and you can see even it's a cultural, the unwritten rule for the whole network is we clean every time, you know, we finish the event. Like, I will have my heels, I'll take off my heels, put my head back, and we will clean the whole venue. And there's so many events that we have done, and we've ended up like emptying the bin bags, cleaning everything, and then the cleaners will come and they'll just look at us like, and bear in mind, these girls are highly educated. We all, luckily, mashallah, all the girls are like university level, master's level. Some of them are working in their own profession, but we don't wait for the cleaners to do it, you know. And I think and they saw me do it in the Taco Network. And I think how you are kind of rubs with your brand and what your brand stands for. There's never been an event where I left after my event finished. I made sure that it's clean, it's done, everything is set for the cleaners, and do to the best of my ability, even if it means that it's nearly midnight. I wouldn't want someone else to clean my mess. And the girls kind of picked up, and they see me like with full makeup on, hosted International Women's Day for 170 girls, and I take my put my headphones and start cleaning everything. And there have been comments where you'd, oh yeah, but there's cleaners. And I'm just like, what? I know there's cleaners, but you really want them to clean our popcorns? I want them to focus on other things, you know, even give them a day off day for that they can just come to an event, because in the event industry, it's very, very messy. It's people just do their thing and they just leave because they just think they're using the space. And not many people or not many hosts have that even consideration of, like, for the catering team, for the cleaners, for the security guards who lets them, because they're so focused on that event that they're putting on, that purpose, that they forget all the encounters that they're having with all the human touch that they're having with everything else. And to this day, because I host in coffee shops, we clean everything, we finish everything, and we had multiple times where the cleaners will come and they'll just be like, well, okay, that's my shift done. And I'm just like, well, why don't you go home early today? Like, go to your
family. Have a great one.
You know, and there's Somali saying, you know, which I don't know how to translate that. You know, I don't know by myself, the girl who helped me and we do it together and it's quicker, you know. And that's right. One thing I would advise to. It's not about what you do, whether you are performing a surgery or whether you are a wedding planner, whether you are, I don't know, whatever you are in life. Like, there is a human touch to it that you can make change of, that you can make someone's day, that you can improve something on. It's not the bigger picture of how do I change the world. That's what most people focus on, and they're like, oh my god, where the hell do you want me to start? The little old me. I make drinks for people and they're so happy, crying with tears. So you'll be surprised of the little things that you can do to make a difference in life.
That's and so true.
Empty that bin out after your event, the cleaner to come to know that the bins have changed can put people into tears. You'll be surprised. So
yeah,
that will be one thing I would say, like, just make sure that you find the human touch in things. Like, when was the last time you've ordered a surprise, like, you know, flowers or pizza or chicken wings or whatever your friends love for them? It's just the little things, and when you go back to the little things, you would know that you would forever be making changes because you're not focused on the bigger things.
Yeah, I think that that's really, really powerful. And I think that a reason why people get really emotional, especially people that do work who are working as cleaners or as like night guards or whatever it may be, a lot of the times people will walk straight past them. People won't say please or thank you and just like show them that common human decency. And so I definitely understand what you mean, because sometimes they are, you know, taken aback or shocked, because we all walk around with like our heads in the air and we don't look around us at all. And yeah, it's one of those things that like definitely when I lived in London, even like with, because London has a huge population of like people who are homeless.
Yeah.
And you just like see how like, it's as if they're invisible to everybody else, you know, like the way people just move about their days. And the moment that you like, you know, you may like buy them a sandwich from like a Sainsbury's or whatever and like get them some water or like ask them if they need anything or whatever. And it's just like some of them get very, very shocked. Because people don't do that normally.
Yeah.
But it is really important. It reminds me of what an old boss had said to me once. He was just like, a true leader always makes sure that the people that work for them are the ones that eat first. And that's really, really important, because it's like, okay, so you've got all of this responsibility and prestige or whatever, but at the end of the day, if you understand that your purpose is to serve people and that, you know, you're doing all of this great work with the Taco Network for the community, for these young women, then you understand that, yeah, it's not about you. You know what I mean? You understand that it's for the quote unquote greater good, right?
Yeah.
That's which is so humbling.
That's where the coffee was born as well. And now I'm lucky enough to have like a platform with the coffee, and which my whole videos resonate with the hashtag coffee with Lothan. And now I'm able to work with roasters and wholesale to sell coffee. So yeah, like obviously the pandemic pushed deadlines back, but for me, I'm so excited and I can't wait, you know, to be able to have an online coffee store running. That's amazing, and I can't wait. That it just kind of adds to the brand, and it's nothing new. I think people just kind of saw it coming, so that was really nice, and people kind of welcomed it very well, which is amazing, because it's not off my brand, it's close to my brand. So alhamdulillah, I think people did receive it well. So I'm super excited and I can't wait like to take over that scene.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely incredible. I saw like you announcing and I was like, no way. So like, just so the listeners have a bit of context, what is Taco Coffee?
So I'm sure you've heard the podcast now, so you know who I am as a person and the kind of stuff that I stand for. I think the Taco Coffee is just to expand the Taco Network to a new venture and to create that online space as well that people can purchase. Because of the pandemic, we're not able to have the girls coming in together and do what we do usually. And I'm doing a lot of online events. So I just thought, you know what, we're going to be having coffee at home. So why not have a bit of coffee with me as well? So it's expansion of my existing brand, but it's also to create like a bit of a bit of a diversity in the coffee industry as well, because it's the most gentrified industry you can think of. Like, oh my god, if you really want to see a white man, then just check out the coffee industry and check out the CEOs. They're literally like, I can't even go into it. So it's to create a little bit of diverse, because coffee, most of coffee comes from either Africa, Central America, Asia, and ironically most of people from the coffee industry are not very diverse. It's not very inclusive environment, and we have coffee festivals, we have all these competitions, and it's just not the most diverse. But for me, I just want to be able to create a beautiful line where I'm able to work with a different people, bring a different source of energy, and also in link to the women work that I do as well, and work with women farmers back in Africa. I'm looking into Rwanda and Uganda, which I absolutely love, and yeah, just work with the women farmers and create that connection between the farmers, women farmers back there and the women here, and see how we can work together to continue that change. And the network and the legacies wouldn't just stop in here, it can also continue in other parts of Africa as well. And it's just any excuse for me to continue working with women internationally as well, where I can go visit them and we can, you know, work together. I can purchase from them as well. That's the ultimate goal, is to support those women and create a beautiful line, and also connect the women here as well with the women farmers.
That's really ambitious, and I think it's also very needed. And it's sort of this question that continues like coming into my head while you're like speaking, because I'm honestly in awe. And that is, okay, so the entire world has been hit by this pandemic, right? And you decide that you're gonna quit your job as a barista, you're gonna launch your coffee brand, and you're going to continue pushing forward. So where do you find, what are the sort of like wisdoms or like understandings that get you to continue moving forward in such a courageous way? Because I feel like a lot of people are paralyzed by like the fear of the unknown. And this year has definitely been an unknown, you know?
Yeah. Now that you put it that way, it does look like I'm actually doing something this year. But for me, I would just say, like, I've crumbled. It's far from it. It's interesting that you're looking at it that way. And I'm just sitting here thinking, oh my God, like, it's been crazy. So for me personally, I'm just in the category of the most people that you've just mentioned, in terms of seeing, not knowing the unknown, and just literally crumbling, that's the right word. But I think it's the Somali in me as well, because we're so used to so sad, but we're so used to getting up and not defeated. And also in my culture, like, we're nomads, you know, we move around a lot, move, change circumstances, change of environment, weather. It's a Somali song. Yeah, you just have to keep moving. And I think that kind of played a little bit. I think the first wave of lockdowns and the first wave, like, you know, the beginning quarter of the year, I got knocked so hard that I just wanted to sleep till the March 2021. Then I've kind of just said to myself, you know what, do what I can and see how it goes. But I just didn't let it defeat me. So that would be, that's the thing. I just said to myself, I can't come and die. I'm not going to sit here and let this year win. I'm lucky to be alive. I'm going to continue. But then at the same time, I was very respectful of how I was dealing with things. The last thing you want to do is benefit to the extent where people are struggling and people are not in the right places, and I kind of profit and I make money. that wouldn't even sit well with me anyway. By the way, this is my first business because I am not the most business orientated type of person.
Me neither.
If you look at my category, if you look at my CV, all you would see is a charity, humanitarian mm-hmm. work, and like even yep. now I work as a support worker. So there's nothing in my blood, like maybe in my gene, yeah, my family are very business orientated type of people. And if you look back at the women in my life, they're quite business people as well. But for me, I'm more to the humanitarian than I am to business, where this year I had to do a lot of adjustment, you know, fight with my conscience as well, because I was supposed to have everything ready by to sell now. But then mm-hmm. again, that would have meant that I had to make the orders and work during the first hit where so many people were dying. But personally, I just didn't think it was the right thing to do, you know. So I've made a conscious decision to not do that because it didn't go well with me. I didn't want to put pressure on the drivers or the people that were making the orders and where I was ordering stuff from and all those things. Yes, you're creating mm-hmm. jobs, but then at the same time, I'm exposing those people because I'm sitting at home and I have the access to do that online. I'm putting people from different walks of life and burdening them. So some people might look at it differently, but personally, I just didn't think it was the right thing to do. So I kind of just literally put the book down and I just said, okay, cool, let's see where everything is, let's see what I can do to volunteer, let's see what I can do to be there for my mom, my brother and everybody to survive, and my friends, check on my friends constantly and focus on those things, because at the end of the day, that's what's important to me right now. Yeah. So even though I was putting the coffee line and I was making the announcement and all those things, I made sure that I am very careful and I'm not the one who's benefiting to an extent where it wouldn't sit well with me, because you can literally give me £1 million today and wallahi, I'm one of those people, if it does not sit well with me, the chances of me declining that £1 million is really high, because
yeah,
I was
too.
Never driven by money. I was never driven yeah. by give me. Girl. So it's like, yes, £1 million can change my life, it can change my family life, it can be whatever, but it's just the way I am as a person. You can never put price, you know, where I would change my values and who I am as a person. And I knew that this was a business and I knew I have to think like more competition, more getting it done and this and that. But then at the same time, I don't want to run a business that ethically is not correct to the I want. And it also not halal friendly as well. Whatever halal friendly means. But I just wanted to make sure we all yeah. we are okay. We found like some sort of a support. People are not dying in thousands. Like I think some people can make money. Some people can sit at home where there's 2,000 deaths have been announced and they can continue making money. And that's, I'm so happy for you. Like, go get your money. But for me personally, I'll be devastated. I was just there thinking, oh my God, we have 1,000 people dying a day. Oh my God, you know? So I think it's just as a person, it was really difficult for me. And yes, it might come across as like, you know, me making moves and making changes in my life, but there was a lot of like battle with my conscience. There's a lot of battle with my personal development as well, just who I am as a person, questioning myself and what I think is right. The idea of having business, even that does not well sit well with me, but then at the same time, I can make it ethically correct, I can make it Islamically friendly, I can make it how I would want it, you know. So that's the only thing that pushes me, is that I can do it in a way where I'm not it's not against my conscience.
That's, you've put it so perfectly, and I'm sitting here like, yes girl, speak on it, because a lot of the time I do not meet people that think like me in this way, like working in the humanitarian sector. I mean, it's definitely not the most well paying.
No, it's not. I love it.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like someone the other day was like, oh yeah, are you thinking of like moving back to Somalia? I'm just like, I mean, if the right opportunity comes, yeah. I may just go back. But it's just like, I resigned from my last job, because although it was in the humanitarian sector, there was a lot of things that didn't sit right with me about how things yeah. were being done. And so I was just like, My conscience. It's a very loud place. And it usually wins when I'm weighing things out. So I'm just like, you know what? Not only will I be less stressed once I leave, but I'll also be able to sleep better at night. After like resigning and leaving and taking a month of holiday afterwards, trust me, the dark circles under my eyes were gone. I felt less guilty about certain things. I was just like, thank the Lord, alhamdulillah. And that's just how it went. So like, I totally understand, you know, that feeling in your gut where you're just like, nah, it has to check certain boxes. Otherwise, I'm not doing this. I totally get that.
Yeah.
And to wrap things up, I want to ask you, if you could give this chapter of your life a title, what would it be called?
Surviving.
If it's hey.
That's it. Literally.
This year. Surviving. Oh my goodness.
Surviving. What are you talking about? Like every single day I wake up, I'm like, alhamdulillah, I'm awake, I'm alive, I'm grateful.
That's so real.
Let me just make myself a coffee and let me make my grandma a coffee, see if she's okay. You know, I don't even go to the same room as my grandma. I just check her out. Like, you're right. Yep. I don't want to expose her. So yeah, say surviving. I think the whole world is surviving this year. And if you found a victor, like a happiness, and you found a place and you had a blessing this year, then good for you. Congratulations. And may God make it better for next year for everyone. But I would definitely say surviving, for God's sake. Like, seriously, sis, can we catch a break?
The bullets keep flying, truly and honestly.
Don't let it get down to you. As long as you're breathing, please, please, please look after your mental health. Look after yourself.
Yep.
And align yourself with people who look at life that way. It would be a lot easier to, even social media is very important who you follow. It's so easy to follow people who in things, people who are like more upbeat, they're lively, they're grateful. Yeah, do it. Follow those type of people. And if you feel like, you know, other social media platforms are creating you like headache, or they're making you anxious, self-doubt, making you feel insecure, then sis, you need to start blocking and unfollowing, and follow yourself like people who are not focusing more of a physical appearances, who focus more on the mind, and stimulate your mind. That would be my advice.
That is a perfect place to end, ladies and gentlemen. You can find Lathan on social medias at Lathan Taco. You can find Taco Network at Taco Network, and Taco Coffee to come soon as well. And all of those things will be in the descriptions of this episode. So thank you so much for being on, Lathan. Thank you guys so much for listening. And I'll speak to you guys again next week. Bye.